Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
Well, it's now been 16 years since 9/11 happened, and the lies told to us by the government, corporate media, as well as some of the alternative media outlets still prevail, to the detriment of us all. The consequences of the lies of 9/11 are vast and devastating. Today's show is dedicated to the victims' family members and to the survivors of 9/11 and to all of the victims' family members of the 9/11 wars, the wars falsely justified by the lies of 9/11. They are illegal in Afghanistan, Libya, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, and Pakistan. And it's also dedicated to all the victims of the illegal torture and secret renditions, and to all of us here at home and abroad who have suffered under the loss of our civil liberties and freedom of expression. Our economy and our Constitution are in shambles, and we have a government and a media that no longer serve us, but answer to the bankers, the giant corporations, and the global elite. The sad thing for me is that the propaganda concerning 9/11 has been so relentless that many of our friends and family members still believe it, to the detriment of us all. The powers that be have used fraudulent investigations, controlled media, and it's all reinforced by false films and books repeating the official lies of 9/11 ad nauseum. And they even built a museum that perpetuates the lies. So to honor the victims' family members, you'll hear today from a few of them. Some people say that it's disrespectful to the family members to challenge the official lies of 9/11 around the anniversary. But many of the victims' family members are involved in the 9/11 truth movement and welcome these challenges. In fact, it was four widows whose husbands died in the towers on 9/11 who were responsible for forcing the 9/11 Commission into existence. So on today's show, we'll hear from two victim family members. The first one is Patty Casaza. In 2008, the Connecticut 9/11 Truth Group worked with others from around the country and Canada to put on a 9/11 conference here in West Hartford at St. Joseph College. Victims family member Patty Casaza spoke there. She lost her husband in the towers and began to work with three other widows that later became known as the Jersey Girls, and it was through their efforts that the 9/11 Commission was forced into existence. So today you're going to hear that speech from that 2008 conference here in West Hartford. So here she is, Patty Casaza.
Hi, I'm Patty. Believe me, if it wasn't for our friend John Gold here and so many other citizen activists, I'm sure the 9/11 movement would have died a long time ago. Partly the reason for that is that every time we look at the information on 9/11, we die a little. And I speak from that from personal experience. This is not an easy thing. I wish I could do more with the movement myself, but it pains me greatly to know that it's 6+ years and we still don't have a true investigation into 9/11. We worked hard to form the commission. It took us 18 months of fighting, basically weekly, daily on the phone, writing emails, sending out letters, doing press conferences, all of which I never did before in my life. I was in nursing school when 9/11 occurred, and we brought with us to Washington, to your representatives, empirical evidence showing that 9/11 shouldn't have happened for a number of reasons. Basically, from the outset, the planes, they didn't follow protocol. There should have been planes sent to accompany the commercial airlines. One's a transponder, which is the identification the FAA uses to track planes. Once that went off, that's in itself reason enough for fighter jets to be sent up into the air. And their purpose isn't necessarily shoot down an errant plane. That's the last resort. But they do have the means to, they're supposed to go on either side of a plane, rock their wings. That's an indicator that the pilot should turn some type of communication on with these fighter jets, let them know that everything's okay on board, that this, you know, there isn't a hijacking or a pilot hasn't, you know, gotten sick. All of those things can happen without you shooting down a plane, and those jet fighters could rock their wings. They can actually knock, if there were hijackers actually flying those planes, they could have knocked those people off their feet. So there were many measures that could have been taken and should have been taken, and those were written in protocols and were not followed on 9/11. And that's with four commercial jet airliners having been hijacked. I ask you, how is that possible? We spend more money in military than more than half the countries total in the world. And again, we couldn't get one plane up in time to accompany those four planes that were wildly off course. That's just one instance, and we brought those things to Washington, and we actually had congressmen and senators say, well, that's all very well and good, but what is the president saying? What do you mean, what is the president saying? We're asking for an investigation based upon empirical evidence. To my way of thinking, that's all you needed. I'm a citizen. I'm bringing forth information. It's right or wrong. And I'm expecting that my representatives are going to do something about this. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Nothing happened until we went to the press, until we made ourselves these annoying little gnats that wouldn't go away. The Pan Am 103 families were the ones who forced us to do a rally. They said, you're not getting listened to. If you don't get a rally going, nothing's going to happen. You're going to go away. 9/11's, you know, going to be a non-issue in a few months. So we went to Home Depot and started cutting up wood ourselves, figuring out how high does a piece of wood have to be for people to hold it up and be seen. And we got buses. I don't know how any of this transpired, but we did it because we didn't know what we were doing, but we called around. And we got it done. We got over probably like 300 families down in D.C. to come with us. And after that, it was something that the government apparently could not overlook our efforts. And as I said, it took us 18 months to get that commission. Then the commission was installed. And it was not with people that we would have chosen. We wanted academics. We wanted, you know, people in professions like Dr. Gage. And such who could provide evidence. We did not have evidence presented at the 9/11 Commission. We got platitudes, we got a lot of rhetoric, and we got lies with a smattering of the obvious truths. Yeah, there were four planes that day. Okay. Much more than that, we don't know. We don't even know who was on those planes for sure. I never saw one terrorist get on a plane. I have trouble with that. Nobody showed me the bank accounts from Muhammad Atta or any of these other people who supposedly got on planes and destroyed those buildings. I did get a phone call from my husband after the first plane had hit, and he had thought that there were bombs going off in the building, and he knew he was going to die. They had already tried to find their way out. The center cores of the building had been destroyed, and the rooftop doors were locked. And the room had been filling up with thick black smoke, and they were finding it difficult to breathe. He asked me to find help. And obviously there was no help for those above, I think it was the 78th floor of that building. And even with that, I look back on the day and I say to myself, where was the emergency broadcast system? You know, all these people were calling 911, and especially for people in Building 2 who still had a chance to get out between Building 1 and 2 getting hit. Where was that? That is the system that is supposed to be in place to let you know what to do in the event of an emergency. If 9/11 was an emergency, what does qualify as one? Those people in Building 2 were told to go back to their desks, that it was safer for them in the building. And that was a lie. The first responders, most of them will tell you, the people who got out because their instincts told them to get out. And that's how most people saved themselves on that day. Even with regard to the rooftop doors, in 1993, the rooftop doors were not locked. How else do you expect people in a building that's 110 stories high to get out in the event of an emergency? Even if, one, say, one full floor is engulfed in flames, how do you expect them to get out? The fire trucks can't reach ladders and water up that high. They got out in 1993 via the police department. The rooftop doors were not supposed to be locked according to those buildings' permits. But then the building is owned by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which is pretty much a group that can write its own laws. And so in the police rescued 43 people in 1993, and apparently there was some kind of disagreement between the fire department and the police department, and the rooftop doors were locked. Now, the fire department had wanted to be the service of rescue, but they don't have helicopters. Only the police department does. So, you know, it turned out to be politics over lives. And I believe 9/11 was basically about politics and agendas. Not my agenda, not your agenda. So we became part of somebody else's agenda. And that's what has not been investigated, what that agenda was, why it happened, and how it happened. I don't have ideas exactly on how it happened, but I know it didn't go as according to what the commission put down on paper. And one of the reasons why we still continue to fight with the, for the commission, even as we knew it was a farce, is we wanted their words, their lies, down on paper. We wanted to make them go through at least this exercise. And even if it came down to the annals of history, that the truth will come out, that was part of our purpose. Our purposes were layered. We'll be a pain in the butt. That's fine. We'll get their lies down on paper. We'll have more Americans wake up to the fact that their government is not looking out for their best interest. In fact, they may be counter to our best interests. But none of this would have come to this point if, in fact, the commission didn't exist at all. And for that, I'm grateful that we had the wherewithal to get that done with other family members and the support of the public and others like John Gold and the people who helped us with the video, Press for Truth. Without those people spreading the word, I believe more people in the future might not run out of a burning building, that they actually might listen to a recording that says, you're safe in the building, remain seated, or you could be fired. I think we have to start thinking for ourselves and questioning everything.
Here she's responding to a question from the audience about what happened to Sybelle Edmonds' testimony before the 9/11 Commission. And Sybelle Edmonds was an FBI translator.
Sybelle came to, actually, Four Widows and asked us if she could get a hearing with the commission because nobody of the commission was responding to her request to testify. And part of the problem with testifying as someone who's working for one of the agencies is that they have to be careful of state secrets, what they reveal. And in order to be a whistleblower and not be retaliated against, most whistleblowers need to be subpoenaed because then their co-workers and those who might retaliate against them know that under penalty of, you know, law, they could be accused of being traitors and whatnot and put in jail or executed. So most whistleblowers did not come forward on the basis of what happened to Sybelle Edmonds. Sybelle brought us many whistleblowers, and I submitted them personally to Governor Kane, who was the chairman of the commission, and I said, these people are not being subpoenaed. They will not come before the commission voluntarily. unless they are subpoenaed. And he promised me to my face that every whistleblower would be indeed heard. And most were not heard. And Sabelle was only heard because we dragged her in and surprised the commission on one of the days we were meeting with them, that we had her with us. We met other whistleblowers on the side of the road in Maryland, you know, to hear what they could tell us. None of them revealed state secrets to us, by the way. But they had information, and basically the government knew, other than the exact moment, they knew the date and the method at which the attacks were supposed to come. And none of this made it to mainstream media. None of it made it into the commission. And yet, again, all of your representatives on the day that the commission book came out were on their pulpits saying, what a fabulous job this commission has done, a real service to this nation. And it was anything but a service. It was a complete fabrication. Other than the exact, perhaps, time, you know, because planes don't always go off on time. They knew the date. They knew the method that it was going to be with airplanes. They knew that it was that day and they were going to happen. They knew the targets.
And again, you were just listening to Patty Casaza, who lost her husband in the towers on 9/11. Next, you're going to hear from family member Bob McIlvaine, who lost his 27-year-old son in the towers. Bob McIlvaine has been relentless in his search for the truth about 9/11. Next, you'll hear the speech he gave as part of the Toronto hearings. I went to New York City, to Ground Zero, with colleagues Gregory Longo and Frank Tolupko to record this speech. It was taped outdoors, so my apologies in advance for some of the sound quality. So here he is, Bob McIlvaine.
Hello, my name is Bob McIlvaine. I live in Philadelphia, the suburbs of Philadelphia. My son Bobby, almost 10 years ago, died right here at the site of the North Tower. It's been a long 10 years. Basically, all I want to do is introduce how I've come to the point that I'm doing what I'm doing now. But on September 11th, 2001, Bobby lived up at 66 between 1st and 2nd and took the subway to Fulton Street and walked over from Fulton Street, where he had just started a job at Merrill Lynch, which Merrill Lynch is, we're standing on Vesey Street. Merrill Lynch is, we go down the west and make a left on West and trade across the street on West. He had just started there like 2-3 weeks before 9/11. So my assumption is that day we had no idea what happened to Bobby, but we came up to New York and we did find his body. We took Bobby home that week and buried him on a week later on Tuesday the 18th. For years and years, I've been trying to find out what happened that day. But in the beginning, things were so frantic, you spend almost a year just grieving because you just can't figure out what happened. But I questioned the story of 9/11 immediately. But again, I just wasn't getting involved in that too much. I had chosen at that time to go into the anti-war movement or the peace movement. I joined a group called September 11 Family for Peaceful Tomorrows, who were against the war, specifically a war because of 9/11. So I spent a lot of time doing that. I traveled around the world. And it sort of culminated in right before the Iraq War, when I got arrested in front of the White House, which is one of the best things I've ever done in my life, because it just felt good. I've traveled around the world. I've been to Japan to honor about 5 years ago, we walked from Nagasaki to Hiroshima, honoring the civilians killed in wars, and in particular, the bombings of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I've been to Bogota, Colombia, talking about basically what I felt at that time, the blowback of American foreign policy has created this havoc that we have in the world. And of course, I went to almost 90% of the 9/11 commission hearings. Well, my whole life changed after Condoleezza Rice testified. And I don't call it testimony. As far as the case of Condoleezza Rice, it was a filibuster. They were questioning her about this August 6th memo that Osama bin Laden was supposed to attack the United States. And of course, I assume everyone knows what a filibuster is, but she just talked nonsense. And each commissioner only had 5 minutes to speak up or to ask questions. Well, anyway, that ended. Nothing was said. Nothing was done. All the commissioners are Saran and Condoleezza Rice shaking their hands. Everyone's smiling. And that's when I lost my cool. It was after that that I did an interview. I was angry, and I've been angry ever since. I realized the investigation was a total sham, and I think everyone in the world knows that the investigation was a total sham. Even the commissioners admit that, some of the commissioners admit that it was a sham. So I've dedicated my life since then to just concentrating on 9/11 truth. Even at that time, I felt strongly that there were people within the United States who were involved in this, but who knew? So since 2004, I've dedicated my life to what happened that day. And I've been very global in that thinking. You know, you talk about put options, you talk about NORAD, you talk about so many other things that are so important to 9/11. But I've noticed when I talk to people, they get glassy-eyed because there's so much information. Now, all this time, I'm looking into 9/11. I'm also looking into, and I think if anyone's lost a child, specifically murdered, but you always want to know exactly what happened to your child. You know, I know people that lost a child in a car accident. They wanted to know, did that child suffer? And that's a big part. I could never figure out what happened to him. We took Bobby home that week. It was one of the first 10 bodies found. I never viewed the body itself because they said, and I'm glad I didn't, because it was truly mangled. But his whole body was taken home. Well, a few years ago, I finally ran into the doctor who examined Bobby, and he gave me an outline. He told me not to look at the pictures, but he gave me an outline of all his injuries. And this was very revealing to me because there was over 100 phone calls made to Bobby that morning, and of course, not one of them was answered. Now, if he was anywhere, he would immediately have answered that phone. So what was happening, I think, this is my scenario, he came down the Fulton Street, walked over here, and decided to go to a seminar that was on the 106th floor of the old North Tower. And we ruled out that he was on the 106th floor because he wouldn't have been one of the first 10 bodies found. We thought maybe he jumped, but the thing is, he had one small break on his leg, and all his injuries were in the chest and in the face. Back of him, no problem. His skull was still intact, but everything was blown off his face. He lost his arm and severe lacerations of his chest. So from what I talked to the doctor, Bobby died instantly. He didn't have a chance to pick up his phone or answer in the cell phone. So through the years, and of course in my investigation, and I'll get to that real fast after we're done this, I am talking to so many EMS workers, so many firemen, so many policemen, the explosions that were taking place in the towers before and after the plane hit. And this is the most important point to me. The 9/11 Commission hearings states that a fireball from the plane hitting from the 93rd to up to the 98th floor, because the plane went in on an angle, the fuel was in the wings, and the 9/11 Commission reports attributes the damage to the lobby, where many firemen have told me it looks like a bomb went off in the lobby. Bombs went off in the sub-basement. I've had reports that the bombs went off before the tower or plane hit. So my scenario is that the idea, again, the commission saying only a fireball created this damage, the explosions that were going off in the basement and in the lobby, I feel Bobby walked into the lobby, or might not have even made it into the lobby, and there was a huge explosion. And what finally caught me on as far as exactly what happened to Bobby, I was wondering why, well, if they said it was a fireball, he would have had severe burns, because within the North Tower, you had people that were charred. People's bodies were cut in half, but everybody was charred. And I'm saying to myself, well, what happened to Bobby? I don't know exactly where they found him. But, and this is a key point, in an explosion, in a detonation, the air that shoots out from that explosion is supersonic. The gases shoot out in supersonic speed, and then the heat follows it. The fireball, supposedly, that came down does not have that energy. Remember, every window in the North Tower was blown out. You have an area of 208 feet by 208 feet. It's impossible that a fireball created that damage. So therefore, my thing with Bobby was that he was walking into the towers. There was a huge explosion. It killed him instantly, hit him in the face, hit him in the chest, obviously took off his arm, and that's how he died. So I give presentations now. I say, well, how in the world did those explosions take place? And my point being is there's no way in the world Muslims set those detonations. The planes, it was impossible that the planes created that havoc. So when I'm talking to you nice people up in you great people up in Toronto, if you could, please, please spend time on these explosions. There's so much testimony. And remember, the 9/11 Commission report refused to acknowledge the testimony they got from firemen, from policemen, from the EMS workers of these explosions that were taking place in the sub-basement. And both the 9/11 Commission report and NIST lied about that. NIST said that there were no explosions, so why do we have to test the steel that came from the towers? So, do I want a new investigation? To quite frankly with you, I don't care if there's a new investigation. I know it's necessary, but I can't believe an honest investigation will never take place. You're having hearings up in Toronto. I just think it's such a wonderful thing because it's going to put this information out to hopefully the whole world. And from that, maybe we would have a nonpartisan objective investigation. But just for me, please spend the time on those explosions, because that's a key point to me, that if these explosions took place, I can't believe, I know that the Muslims did not set those explosions within, or those bombs within the towers. And I would rather exonerate or let the Muslims of the world off the hook. The fact that, I'm getting to the point where I don't really care who murdered Bobby. But the thing is, we're in a constant war, and it's based on what happened that day, what happened that morning. And these are explosions that took place. So I really wish you luck in Toronto. My spirit is with you, but my family, we're here at Ground Zero every September 11th. Or I'm getting sick of that also, especially since Bush is going to be down here. But we'll be here. So I will be thinking of you, and I just want you all to stay strong and do your thing. Thank you.
And again, you were just listening to Bob McElvain, who lost his son in the towers on 9/11. There are some exciting new efforts by the 9/11 Truth Movement to expose the lies of 9/11. And one of them is being done by Bob McElvain himself. On September 11th in Washington, D.C., at the National Press Club, Bob McElvain kicked off what's called the Bobby McElvain Act, Bobby being his son's name. And what it does is it calls on members of Congress to endorse this act, which will require a new investigation into 9/11. If you want to help out, you can call your congressmen or women and ask them to sponsor this act. Again, it's called the Bobby McElvain Act, and it would get us a new investigation into 9/11. So in closing, if you still believe the official conspiracy theory of 9/11, I'm asking you to please do some independent research. And a good place to start would be any book by David Ray Griffin on 9/11. He's written over 10 or 11 of them. His latest book is called How Bush and Cheney Ruined the World, which focuses on the neocons as the likely perpetrators of 9/11. Some of his other books are The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, Debunking 9/11 Debunking, The New Pearl Harbor, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, and so on. He has, as I said, over 10 or 11 of them. Another place you can go is to the Architects and Engineers website. They've done a ton of scientific research, and their website is ae911truth.org. You can watch videos there. You can also go on YouTube and watch their videos, and I would recommend also the video Incontrovertible. There's just incontrovertible scientific evidence that the World Trade Center's collapse through controlled demolition. You've got to know this stuff. If you don't know this, you can't possibly understand what's going on in our world today. And we need you, the rest of us who get this and who understand this, need you all to understand what's going on in order to stop it. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening. Power to the people, right on.